Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artists First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into Unique Life Starring You. This show airs at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Monday. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/unique, YOUNIQUE.HTM. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here's your host of Unique Life Starring You, Susan Stackpole.
Thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for joining us here on Unique, YOUNIQUE, Life Starring You. We are what we are because of you. So thank you so much for tuning in. If you're just joining us, we have a little project here at Unique called Pray It Forward. There's a lot of disconcerting things in the media, and people are going through some challenging times, and there's studies that prove that loving energy, prayer, and positive thoughts definitely make a difference. So we ask that when you see those things, or if you know anyone who's going through a challenging time, just send a little love their way and brighten up their life. Tonight we have a special treat, and we have with us a feng shui expert, and she's going to share all about with us what feng shui is, in case that's a new term for you, and I'll tell you a little bit about her. How does a woman with a background in statistics and technology become a feng shui expert? Well, Helen Arbanos became fascinated when she realized how practical feng shui is in so many situations. Today, she runs a Southern California-based feng shui consulting business. And for nearly a decade, Helen has helped people from all walks of life, including celebrities, students, married couples, and single women wanting a relationship. She is the author of the increasingly popular, unique, and insightful book, He's Into You, But Is His Home. Please check out her website at Full Bloom Feng Shui. And feng shui is FENGSHUI.com. Again, that's fullbloomfengshui.com. Please join me in welcoming the lovely Helen Arbanos. Welcome to the program, Helen.
Thank you, Susan. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are just delighted to have you and have you share all sorts of insights with what our space says about us and what about it, what it says about the opposite sex. So thank you for being here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Nice way to spend a Monday evening.
Agreed, agreed. The pleasure is definitely mutual. Helen, for those who may be just meeting you for the first time, share with us a little bit about where your passion for organizing space and understanding how the energy of a space affects the individuals in it began. Is it something that began when you were young? Is it something that you came into as you grew up?
Kind of both of those. I first kind of had an intuitive understanding or a knowledge that our space affected us. I didn't know how, but when I was about 8 years old, I started drawing out floor plans and cutting out shapes and labeling them sofa, bed, dresser, et cetera, and moving them around on the floor plan and saying, well, we need red here, blue here. And I didn't really know what I was doing. I just knew that by changing our environment, things in our life could change. And it wasn't until the mid-1980s that I actually heard the term feng shui for the first time from a man from China. He was actually the father of a coworker, and the three of us had gone to lunch, and he started talking about feng shui, and I became fascinated, and so I had a thirst for knowledge about feng shui, basically, and whenever I went to a bookstore, I would check their bookshelves, see if they had any information on feng shui. I had friends who would check bookshelves when they were in a bookstore and pick up a book if they found one, because it was kind of hard to find information back then. It's become much more popular now, but I still hear people have a hard time sorting through all the information about feng shui and what it really is and what's what, because sometimes the different books or references can appear to be contradicting themselves. But it's really just that there are so many layers to feng shui. that without knowing all the facts, there are different ways of looking at things.
Right, and I think that that's such an excellent point, Helen. I'm going to backtrack here for a second for listeners who may be saying, feng shui, what in the world is that? For those listeners, Helen, can you give us a very basic definition of exactly what feng shui is?
Sure. It started in China about 5,000 years ago, and it basically is looking at energy, much like most people understand what acupuncture is. I describe feng shui as acupuncture for the home.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, because it's about looking at the energy pattern in a home and balancing it by placing specific objects in very certain points. You know, just like an acupuncturist will, if you've got a certain ailment, they'll know to place a needle in your hand or your shoulder or your foot. That may not be the point that's bothering you, but that's where the needle goes to balance the energy. And so in feng shui, when you're looking at traditional feng shui, a professional needs to determine the chart and then will advise you on color placement or water features or wind chimes, et cetera, whatever is needed in an area to balance the energy that's affecting you, a certain area of your life. And it doesn't always correspond. Like sometimes people think, oh, if I want to improve my relationships, I need to do things in the bedroom to enhance it. Yes, that's true, but there may be other areas in the home, depending on the home, that affect relationships as well.
Right, absolutely. And those are some of the things that you share in your book about sort of just being aware of what the environment is saying. And it can be also applied not just in terms of a relationship. I think it offers people a lot of insight about what their home is saying to other people. And it's amazing how our living environment sort of is a reflection of us, and at the same time, it affects us. I'd love to have you share a little bit more with us, Helen, about that relationship between our space and ourselves.
Yeah, it's amazing to me what people have in their homes, because they kind of take it for granted that what's going on in their home is separate from them. But in this day and age, people are so familiar with vision boards and using vision boards to call in what they want in their life. And yet I say our home is a life-size vision board for us, a three-dimensional life-size vision board. And yet people don't always pay attention to what they're putting in that vision board. So, for example, something I talk about in my book, one of the chapters is on art. And I look at people's homes. Oftentimes, the home of a single woman has art that consists of pictures that have a single woman in them. And so if she were creating a vision board and she wants to be in a relationship, would she put pictures of single women on that vision board? No. She'd put pictures of couples or romantic places or people doing activities that she would want to do with a partner in her life. And yet the art in her home is completely opposite of that. So I always say, look at your home and do the items in your home reflect what you either have in your life now and want to keep in your life, or what you don't have and you want to bring in. Because oftentimes the things in our home reflect where we were in the past or who we were in the past or what we wanted in the past that we may not want in our life right now.
Oh, that's such a great point, Helen. For anyone who's just joining us, we're here with Helen Arbanos of Full Bloom Feng Shui, and that's Full Bloom, FengShui.com. Helen, you touched on something really important, I think, about this idea of being present in our lives and allowing our space to reflect that. And there are so many people I know that have issues with clutter and with letting go of the past. And what advice would you offer up for people, especially a lot of women I know, get very sentimental. And so where maybe it's not an outfit that they're wearing anymore, however they wore it to their best friend's wedding, and so they want to keep it, or something like that. What advice do you have for helping people understand, number one, the effect that clutter has on their environment, and number two, how to let go of it.
Well, good questions, because yes, clutter comes up a lot. And as far as like saving outfits, like you said, if it's something you're going to wear again sometime, that's fine to keep it if you have the room. But so often, you're right, women do hang on to clothes because for sentimental reasons. But if you don't have the space, I suggest to people, take a picture of that outfit and then release that outfit to a resource where it might be used by someone else. Because otherwise, you're just hanging on to the past. And find if they can tap into why does that outfit bring such happy memories, and if they can understand that they don't need the outfit to be able to draw on those happy memories. So that's one way, and sometimes pictures can help people release things, because then at least they have the picture if they need a visual. But oftentimes the clutter is, like you said, it's for whatever reason we like to hang on to the past and keep everything near us. Sometimes it's an insecurity or a fear of moving forward, or I've seen it where people have, for example, lost everything in a fire. So now they really want to keep everything that they have. It's out of fear and a need for security. It's a protection of sorts. So it can be difficult, and sometimes it's just a matter of finding the time to go through things. So I encourage people, don't necessarily say, this weekend I'm going to go through the garage, because that's a daunting task. It's not fun for most of us. So I say start clearing things out a few items at a time. Start with three. Most of us can find three items in our home today that we could get rid of, whether we're going to throw it away, we're going to donate it, or we have a friend that we want to give it to. But as soon as you start clearing out a few items, it starts lifting the energy and the chi, as we call it, the life force in feng shui. The chi starts circulating bit by bit as you release things. So it's not about starting and finishing today. It's about constantly evolving and things flowing as you bring things into your home. I've met people who, let's say, shopaholics, that have kind of needed to follow the guideline that if they bring something new into their home, they have to release something out of their home so that they don't get so overwhelmed with all these things. So for every new pair of shoes they brought home, they had to release one pair of shoes. And so sometimes that helps people from buying new, because if they love what they have so much, they're not ready to release those things. So by doing it gradually and maybe keeping it fluid, I always suggest keep a box or a bag handy, whether it's in a closet or in the garage or wherever you have room, so that when you see those things in your home that you're ready to release, you can put them in the box or bag right now, and it starts the flow and the process of it moving out. You start disconnecting from it instead of leaving all those things around that you think you might want to get rid of one day. It starts the process. And another tip I always tell people, when you're clearing out clutter, a lot of people can go along fine because they're sure they want to get rid of this, they're sure they want to keep this. They get to an item that they're not sure, and they stop and think about it and say, oh, okay, I'll get rid of that one. And they keep going, they find another. But usually when they get to two or three items that they've been unsure about, they get overwhelmed and they just stop. So I always suggest that you sort into three piles. One is what you want to keep, one is what you know you're ready to release, and one is what you're not sure of. And you just keep going, because when you go through everything, then that pile that you know you want to release, you can release. And then you can go back through the unsure pile. And oftentimes the next time you go through, you get very clear on some of those things, whether you want to keep them or release them. And so it helps, because a lot of times it's those objects that we're not sure of that hold us up and stop the flow of releasing anything. And that's the most important thing, is to be able to release some things. It's not about do you get the whole garage cleared today. Can you release a few items?
And
if
I
you can get a few items today and a few items tomorrow or next week, it just makes the process easier.
And I think that's such an important thing that you mentioned too, Helen, that it's a work in progress. Of sometimes, you know, for some people that they want to clear off the calendar and do it all at once on a Saturday, and for some people it might be overwhelming. And this idea of making it a habit where it's a regular part of life, where you're consistently releasing things that maybe no longer serve you, to go on and be of help to someone else. I think that that's a great way to look at it, and especially your suggestion about sorting it out so that you can keep moving forward versus getting stuck with those one or two items that you might be, oh, well, maybe, maybe not. So that's a really excellent suggestion. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And I have that written out, actually. It's a free download on my website. So if people want to go to my website, they can download that so that they have that basically in writing in front of them so that they can stay present to that if they're taking on a clearing out project.
Great. And for anyone just tuning in, we're here with Helen Arbanos of Full Bloom Feng Shui, www.fullbloomfengshui, and that's FENGSHUI.com. She's got some great resources there, as she just mentioned, so please check it out. Helen, it's very interesting how Feng Shui really does play a part in people's lives, and you do such a great job of sort of a step-by-step methodical look at, for people in a relationship, for women, and what does the man space say about him, and that sort of thing. It also, I mean, it affects everyone, and there's things even in the media. You talk a little bit sometimes about celebrity relationships and that sort of thing. Explain to us, like, how it correlates, where sometimes you'll see somebody and they're doing really well and everything's going great in their life, and all of a sudden there'll be a big switch. Do you feel that feng shui is a part of that? And if so, how does that affect people?
Well, there's so many factors that affect someone's life, but definitely feng shui can play a part of it when things are going really well, or if things are going not well, it's sometimes an indication that the feng shui is off. And there's so many layers to feng shui. There's a layer that is determined based on the birth date of the individual. There's a layer that's determined about the house, basically the direction it faces and when it was built or any construction history. There's an annual energy that comes into play, and then there's monthly energies that come into play. So all of these energies interact with each other and create the result. So definitely things can change from one period to the next in a person's life. And I often see it when people move, that many of the people who contact me that are first-time feng shui participators, I'll say, they call me and they say, you know, ever since I moved, things just haven't been going right. And often we look for those tangible reasons and we say, oh, I bought a house, so of course my finances are more challenging now because I have a bigger mortgage payment or more expenses because I own versus rent. So there are those tangible reasons, but oftentimes it goes beyond that. It's the energy of the home is different than the energy of the home you used to live in. So having the same furniture, doing the same thing in the same space may not be as supportive. So feng shui is an evolving energy. It's not a static energy that it never changes. As we change and our lives change, we may need to adjust our space to accommodate us, you know, just as if you know, you live alone and suddenly you're living with someone, whether it's a romantic partner or a roommate or a family member moves in with you, whether a child leaves the house. These things all shift energy, and we know that logically we can say, well, we're going to restructure that room if my child moves out of the house, and that's now going to be my home office instead of my child's bedroom. that's very logical, but the energy might affect how productive the use of that space is for one function or another. Oftentimes when I do a consultation, I might suggest that the room that's the home office become the guest room and the guest room become the home office because the energies are more supportive to one activity or another. So feng shui is constantly changing. The energy is changing and we need to adapt to that. So as being a feng shui professional, when I hear stories from people, whether they're people I know or just people I meet out in the world or a client, as I hear things, I'm always listening for, what would the feng shui in the house be that might be affecting that? I'm looking for patterns that they've experienced once they've moved into a house that might indicate something about the energy of that home. So it can always shift and turn. And just as we change and evolve in our life, I think we need to keep in mind that it's good for our space to change and evolve with us.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And that's such an excellent point because I think sometimes if our lives are in constant transformation, that sometimes we try to keep something stable or we try to keep something familiar in our homes when the homes are needing to grow and expand with us, that space has got to support us in whatever we're doing in our lives, and as we're changing that space, it sounds like it's helpful to also be open to the fact of allowing that space to be present and change with you.
Exactly, and also based on what someone wants in their life. For example, when I go into a consultation, I always ask, you know, are you single? Do you want to be in a relationship? Because I'm going to give different recommendations for a single woman who wants to be single versus a single woman who wants to be in a relationship.
Right, absolutely. Tom, let's delve into that a little bit here. I would imagine our listeners are curious. Could you share with us an example of that, of advising somebody who wants to be in a relationship, some of the things to either look for in the space of a potential mate or to be establishing in their own living space to make them more relationship ready?
Sure. Well, I did talk about the art earlier in the program that, you know, if you're a single woman, for example, and you want to be in a relationship, make sure you have pictures in your home that reflect couples or places you would go if you were in a relationship, whether it's a romantic place to visit or a romantic scenery. Even, you know, there's a very popular picture beach with two beach chairs. That's great because it still indicates two. There's room for two. So make sure there's seating area for two. Look for, if you go to a man's home, that you are considering entering into a relationship with, look at how his home is set up. Is it set up? Is there room for another person? And I'm not just talking about the style, you know, how neat or messy the home is or the taste in decor and color of furniture. It goes beyond that. It's about the setup. Does the room, let's say, that has a big screen TV on one wall and has one chair sitting front and center facing the TV, well, where are you going to sit then if you two decide to watch a movie together?
Right.
You know, is there another chair off to the side? Is it as comfortable? Is there a place, a sofa, a love seat where the two of you can sit next to each other, or is the chair big enough to hold both of you? These are things to look at to indicate whether that person's environment is welcoming another person. The entry is very important. How do you get to their home? Are the directions clear? Is the front door easy to find and easy to get to? Or do you have to duck under bushes and step over things on the sidewalk? Does the front door open all the way? Or do they have so many things, whether it's, you know, a briefcase, a book bag, different pairs of shoes, athletic equipment that you have to step over and the door can't be opened? If you have a hard time getting into their space, you'll likely have a hard time getting into their life as well because they're just too busy or too preoccupied that you may have to really work to get into their life. And so that's just something that each person can look at and say, A, am I making my space accessible to a person, a relationship? And B, the person I'm looking at, is their home accessible? Am I willing to do the work and put in the effort to get into their home and get into their life, or did they make it easy for me? Because sometimes people don't even pay attention. They get caught up in life. But that might be an indication that the relationship is going to be on the back burner as well, and they might not be able to make the space and time for someone to the same extent that you're looking for. Again, there's no right or wrong. It's about each individual knowing what they want, what they're willing to offer and able to offer, and what they expect and need from someone else, and do those things align.
That's such an excellent observation, Helen, because I think it's sometimes we just overlook those things, or we don't always make the correlation, and it's so great the way that you're able to make the correlation and say, you know, no, really take a look at the experience you're having and what is that saying in the bigger picture. Helen, what are some things that our listeners could look around the living room or their living space and sort of identify some things that would reflect back to them what they have going on? Because I think sometimes for people, we might have things going on or issues that we're dealing with or looking for solutions, and it might actually be right in front of us in our living environment that it's reflecting something back to us about ourselves. What are some observations that people can make to have a deeper self-awareness about what their space is saying to them about them?
Well, good question, and I'm going to put the answer in the form of a question. I always say to people, whether you're calling in a relationship or a certain career or financial or health situation, I always say, I'll talk relationships, it's usually an easy analogy. If you were in your perfect relationship, look around the living room, let's say, and would you have those items in the house? If you were living with your ideal partner, would you have those same objects? And look through your room and say, would I have this chair, this sofa? Would I have that picture on the wall? Would I have this stack of books on the table? Would I have my bowling shoes sitting in the corner, or my dog bed there? And ask yourself those things. Or if you were in your ideal job making your ideal goal amount of money, would you have those same objects? Now, money may be a little different because we can't always, if you're not making your ideal income, you may not be able to replace the items that you want, that you have in your home that maybe aren't ideal for you. But see if you can find a way to make them look the part. They don't have to be expensive, but they can give the essence of and give the feel. There's a difference between, you know, we all went through a phase at a certain age, whether you're in college or out of high school, you're in your first apartment on your own or with roommates, that, you know, we took hand-me-downs from, you know, a sofa from a parent or a neighbor or a garage sale. And that's okay that they came from those sources, as long as our room doesn't still look, I've seen, you know, 35-year-old men who their living room still looks like a college dorm room. And many women make the excuse of, it needs a woman's touch. What they need to decipher is, does it need a woman's touch? Is it really just that they are decorating is not their forte? Or is it telling them it doesn't matter to them what their home looks like? And or maybe they like it this way because it kind of says keep out, in a sense. So make sure your home isn't sending a message. And that's why I wrote my book the way I did. Most feng shui books out there are how to. They say place this item here or place this item there, but they don't tell you how to look at the space. So I often found when I went to people's homes, for example, a woman wanting a relationship, and she wasn't having the success she wanted, but she had placed the pair of mallards in the southwest corner or whatever other objects she read she needed, but she didn't get the whole concept. She placed these more like a good luck charm. And so I use the expression, it's like placing chocolate sprinkles on top of a mud pie. It's still a mud pie. So my book, yeah, because that's what I could see. My book talks you through looking at the space room by room, how to look at and interpret what the information is telling you. And I write it to women because men are much better at sizing things up that they see visually, whether it's a woman or a home or a neighborhood. It's natural to them. It comes instinctively, I believe, from years of being out in nature hunting, and women were in the caves while the men went out in teams hunting the buffalo. So they learn to size up their environment. And men still do that on a subconscious level much more easily than women do. So it's a different skill that women have to acquire, put on, if you will, their rose-colored glasses, or take off the rose-colored glasses, and look at the space as objectively as you can. What does this room say? When you walk into this room, if this wasn't your home and you walked into this home for the first time, what would you gather about these people? You know, is it a family home? Is it so pristine you don't want to touch it? Is it so dirty you don't want to touch it? And just look around. What are the activities that happen? You can usually figure that out. Is it one chair and one big television? Is there artwork on all the walls? Are there books stacked everywhere? You can really size up what's important to someone, especially in a living room, because remember, the living room is a public room. So that, any time you see someone's living room, that's what they want you to see about them. It's what they want you to know about them. So really take that into account. Now, keep in mind, sometimes people put their best foot forward and it's not their true self. But that's why anything that rings a nerve with you is something to really pay attention to, because if that's what they put in public and it really rubs you wrong, that's what they want you to know about them. That's what they're willing to share about themselves. So those are things to take into account, and for yourself too. Look at your public rooms. Do those tell people who you are and what you want them to know?
Oh, I think that's such a wonderful insight, Helen. And going back to what you said about the difference between men and women, I think that's such an astute point, that a lot of the men that I know, they tend to be really great at the bigger picture. And so, like you said, they can look at things and just size them up very quickly. And as women, we tend to be the nurturers, and so we want to be supportive. And so I think sometimes we tend to focus more on details than the bigger picture. And so I think that it's great that you wrote this book to sort of help women step into a space of seeing things from a bigger picture and understand the meaning that it's conveying, not just seeing it, oh, you know, there's a table in the corner, really sort of seeing how that fits into the grand scheme of things.
Exactly, and you brought up a very good point that women are nurturers, so we tend to look at a space or a man and look at how he needs our help and how we can fix him.
Right.
Even though there's nothing wrong with him, we may look at him and say, well, I don't like the way he dresses. He needs my help. He doesn't have a fashion sense. Whereas a man would look at a woman and say, he wouldn't judge her taste in clothing. He would say, ah, she's going to be high maintenance, or she's, you know, so casual or whatever. And then he's going to size that up and say, does that fit into my lifestyle?
Right.
Whereas women try to turn men into what fits into their lifestyle. So that's why I was very careful with my book that I don't give any hard and fast rules of this means he's great, this means he's not great. This is just telling you something about him, and you decide if that fits into your life and that's what you're looking for.
And I think that that's a really excellent point that you made, Helen, about the, and I don't want to say it across the board because everyone's unique and individual. However, what you said is that men tend to sort of size things up, and rather than saying, oh, I'm going to come in and I'm going to fix it and I'm going to change it, whether it be the person or their living environment or whatever it is, that they tend to take people, okay, this is how they're showing up, this is what they're offering me. Am I able to receive what they're offering me, and am I able to contribute in a way that's comfortable and works for me? Whereas, like you said, that I think that it's ingrained in a lot of women that they look at a guy and say, oh, he has potential, or they look at his living space and say, oh, it has potential, when he's not asking for help. He's not asking for help to update his living space and that sort of thing. So that's one of the things I think is great about your book, is it really enables women to sort of step into that space of look at really what's being offered versus like, oh, well, how can I fix this?
Yeah, and you phrase that in a marvelous way, Susan. I love the way you phrase that. Look at what's being offered, and are you open and willing to receive that?
I think that that's what relationships are ultimately about, Helen. And like I said, I love that your book sort of helps women step into that space, because I think that sometimes that's where men and women, sometimes the communication gets crossed, where, you know, men are sort of saying, okay, this is, you know, this is what's being offered, and can I take it or leave it? And women are not necessarily in that same mind space, so it becomes very sort of confusing, and that becomes difficult to communicate. So I love that you're able to, because I think, you know, you hear so many women say, oh, men are just so tough to figure out, and I don't know what he means. And, you know, I hear so many guys say that they're just being straight up, matter of fact, saying it the way that it is. And a lot of times it's, if women don't hear what it is they want to hear or see what it is that they want to see, they keep trying to reframe it in a different light until it matches with what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you brought up some really good points. I think you're absolutely right on. And, you know, and in part I say that goes back to nature. You know, that for thousands of years, women needed a man to survive, basically.
Yeah.
So we still kind of have that in us to try to twist and contort not only ourselves, but also then try to turn them into what we say we want now in this modern day and age, instead of accepting, you know, some men are much more sporty and some men are much more formal, and we have to decide, what are we looking for? Do we want someone who can go both directions on that? And instead of trying to find a guy and then shape him into what we want.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. For anyone just joining us, we're here with Helen Arbanos of Full Bloom Feng Shui, FullBloomFengShui.com. She's got some great resources on her website, so be sure to check that out. Helen, what is something surprising that people would be amazed to find out about feng shui, or maybe some sort of little tip that can make a big difference that would really sort of surprise people that by shifting those one or two things that it can really begin to transform the energy in their life?
Well, a couple quick and easy things are, if you're looking for a relationship, don't have things in threes. So often people hang pictures in threes or hang them uneven, and in feng shui that can set you up for a relationship that's off balance, that one partner is more dominant than the other. So start thinking in pairs, putting things in pairs or hanging them evenly. In the bedroom, there's always so many mirrors in most people's bedrooms, especially now it became very popular, I'll say 10 years ago or so, to put mirrored closet doors. And those mirrors make sleep difficult. And if we don't get enough sleep, it can affect all areas of our life, our health, our relationships. So I always say remove the mirrors or cover the mirrors in the bedroom, especially, or even in a dining room. A mirror in a dining room can cause digestive issues. you want a dining area to be calm and relaxing, unless you're a fast food restaurant. If you notice a restaurant that has mirrors on the walls, they tend to have people come and go quickly. You're not encouraged to sit and linger over a 2-3 hour dinner served in courses. They want to move you in and out quickly. So same in your house. Cover those mirrors in the dining room or remove them if you can, and in the bedroom, because in the bedroom, not only will it affect your sleep, but if you're not sleeping well and if you're in a relationship, let's say a married couple, and you have a lot of mirrors in the bedroom, you can have problems sleeping, and that can result in problems in the relationship, because oftentimes people will blame their sleep issues on their partner. They'll say, oh, my partner snores, or they toss and turn a lot, and it keeps me awake or keeps waking me up. Well, if you cover those mirrors, chances are both of you will sleep more soundly, so then you won't argue over the snoring or who's stealing the covers from whom, or things like that. So that's a really simple thing. If you have mirrored closet doors and you can't replace them, hang a simple curtain with some curtain rod with some curtains that you can push back during the day, so you can use those mirrors when you need them, but you can cover them at night to kind of quiet them so that they'll sleep when you sleep. TVs and other things in your bedroom can be challenging, whether it's a desk that you work at, whether it's athletic equipment. Try to keep the bedroom for sleeping and romance only. It'll keep it quieter. It'll make sure it's a restful kind of a retreat for you, where you really can escape all those things in your head about, oh, I didn't get to the gym today, or I need to go tomorrow, or I have that big project for work due. Make sure you can go to your bedroom and retreat away from all of that and really quiet yourself. And live with what you love. I always say to people, make sure that in every room or at every place where you spend time in your home, so if you have a favorite chair in your living room, make sure that the view from that chair includes something you love, whether it's a picture or a pillow or a statue or something that you love, so that the view you look at, there is always something that will bring a good feeling to you from wherever you're sitting. So if you sit in a chair in your living room when you're reading, but you sit on the sofa when you're watching TV, make sure both of those seats have a view that contains something that you really love and that brings joy and happiness to you. It will just kind of lift your space for you.
I love that. That's fantastic, because I think so many times people just sort of put up with things, or they don't think about that idea of self-nurturing and really honoring themselves in the space. And so I love that about, and even if it might not be the ideal space or, you know, set up in the ideal way, to have that one or two, you know, have those one or two things that just really that we love that are a focal point, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I find it so important, because especially like in a home office, I mean, think about it, when people go away from their home and go out of the home to work, if they have their own desk space, they tend to bring a picture of family or loved ones or other things, personal items, to make that space their own. And yet in their home, where they sit and spend time, do they still take that attention and mindfulness to set things in their line of sight from where they're sitting at home, whether it's the dinner table? Or, you know, if you are in the kitchen a lot because you're cooking, make sure you have things around that you love. And that doesn't mean that you have to have the best quality granite countertop and top-notch stainless appliances, but put something lovely out on that countertop, or put a picture up on the refrigerator that's lovely, rather than a whole collage of things that can kind of add stress. Clear it off and put one nice picture there. Especially in a garage, many people enter their home through their garage. Put a picture up to greet you when you come home. So when you enter your garage, you see something lovely, whether it's a picture of your family or a picture of a vacation spot you have gone or would like to go, or anything that just puts a smile on your face that acts as a greeter and welcomes you home, rather than the stacks of, you know, half-empty paint cans or weed killer, you know.
Right, right, exactly. And I think we don't even think sometimes how that makes a difference. So that's a really excellent point, Helen. Thank you.
Yeah, it's just so important. I'm just such a firm believer our home should be a safe haven, a respite, not a place of stress. So even if you can just create one little corner, you know, think of Cinderella. She used to sing that song, my own little corner in my own little chair. I can be whatever I want to be.
Right. Create, oh, my gosh.
Create that space in your home where you have your own chair in your own corner.
Oh, I love that. That's fantastic. Helen, we have just a minute or two. Two things. Is there anything in particular you would like for people to check out when they visit your website?
Boy, I have so many articles and links on my website that I think once they start going through, they can just have fun and explore. There is a page on there if they're interested in finding out in feng shui based on your birthday. Each person relates to a certain element. There are five elements in feng shui, and these five elements are also used in acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine, wood, fire, earth, metal, and water. And based on our birth date, we each relate to one of those elements. So on my website, there is a link to one of my affiliates who has a chart where you can enter your birth date, and it'll come up with what your personal number is. Your Mingua, your Kwa number might be a term you've heard, and you can find out what your element is. So that's kind of fun for people to explore and play with. But there's just different articles. I have so many different articles. I talk about the Bagua. There are downloads you can get on the 9-square Bagua that most books are written about that talk about the love and marriage corner. So you can download that, and there's also a copy of the more traditional Bagua that is more the original, how it was developed thousands of years ago. So there's just a lot of interesting information if you want to find out about feng shui for health or finances or relationships or pets or kids or home offices. I have articles on all of those topics. So,
wow,
I'm sure there's
great.
Something for everybody. They can sign up for my newsletter, as well as I have a series of relationship tips. Well, you always get one tip a week for, I think we're up to 15 weeks now.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it sounds like there's lots of helpful information on your site. And for anyone who was just tuning in, Helen Arbanos, www.fullbloomfengshui, and that's F-E-N-G-S-H-U-I, Full Bloom Feng Shui. Helen, one last thing. Do you have a particular mantra or a piece of advice that you would be so kind as to leave with us this evening?
Oh, well, I guess I would have to go back to the first thing is to just live with what you love and be aware of what's around you. Pay attention to how you respond to everything in your space, whether it's a rug you trip over every day or a table you bump into. Pay attention to that. That's, you know, kind of like walking into office every day and a person who always says a nasty word to you every time you walk in. So if it creates discord in your home, you might be better off to remove it. So try as much as possible to live with what you love, or at least live with neutral items and remove those things that don't give you a pleasant reaction when you see them.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Well, again, please visit Helen's website at fullbloomfengshui.com. And Helen, you just are an absolute delight. Thank you so much for sharing your insight and giving us practical tips that we can apply today on uplifting the energy in our space. So thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Susan. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'm always happy to share information, and hopefully people heard something that they can apply to their home today and start making a difference in their lives.
Well, I know I have, so thank you for that, Helen, and thank you, listeners, for joining us here on YOU Unique Life, starring you.